Everyone. Welcome everyone to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. And we want to just let everybody know that we are Zooming from Theosophy Hall, as well as we are having in-person meetings. And for those of you who will be coming to the Lodge, we just want to thank you for joining us in an effort to maintain fragrance-free zones for the benefit of those who are sensitive to different types of odors. And during the pandemic, we have all been very grateful that we've been able to Zoom and keep these ideas out in the public. It's important to recall the ULT declaration about impersonality, in which case here in Philadelphia, we use no names. All questions and comments are directed towards the chairperson. There's no crosstalk or side issues. We just wish to focus on broadcasting these ideas. And in regards to Zoom etiquette, we do ask that if you are not speaking or commenting, to please keep your mute on. And should you decide you need to get up and walk around, please remember to put your video off, because the movements can be distracting at times. So these traditions are designed to welcome all to the study of the philosophy without distractions of any type. So let us all work to maintain these declared traditions. So we will now turn it over, the meeting over, for the announcements and the talk. Thank you. Oh, we are doing a panel today.
We'll begin with a reading of the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy, and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all those who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes, and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. Keeping in line with the policy expressed in the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists, we here in Philadelphia have three weekly meetings On Sunday mornings, we have a combined Zoom and on-site meeting. If you are attending the meeting at the lodge, the doors open at 10:30. Of course, the meeting begins for those at the lodge and Zoom at 11 and lasts till 12. Beginning next week, we are entering upon a new month of study. And the overall theme for the month of January for our Sunday morning discussions and talks is the path of spiritual evolution. And the title for next week's talk is The Greatest Lawful War. On Wednesday evenings, we have a Zoom meeting on the ocean of theosophy. That meeting begins at 7:30 and lasts till 8:45. The subject for this Wednesday evening is the human constitution. And the subject is mind. We are beginning the chapter in the ocean on mind. On Friday evenings from 6:30 to 7:30, we have a more informal theosophy roundtable. And right now we are using the text, The Echoes from the Orient by William Q. Judge as a starting point for our discussions. And for this Friday, the material will be from section 14. For those who are able to get into the lodge on Sunday mornings, we have a book table upon which are displayed straight line theosophical literature, books, pamphlets, and magazines available at cost of publication and shipping. There's no profit made by the lodge for the sale of these books. Those books are available for examination before and after meetings and during library hours. Of course, if you're unable to get into the lodge and you wish to obtain these books, you may inquire as to how to get them by contacting the Philadelphia Lodge at ultphiladelphia@aol.com. All our activities here at the lodge are supported by voluntary contributions of time, service, and money. All are greatly appreciated and needed. If you would like to contribute in any way, or if you would like to help out with platform presentations of the philosophy in some way, you can also contact the lodge, the ULT Philadelphia@aol.com. Now, this morning, the title of our Sunday talk is on New Year, New Cycle. And it will be a panel presentation. We will have two short presentations approaching the subject from different perspectives. And there will be plenty of time afterwards for discussion, questions, and answers. This is all part of our overall theme for the month of December, cycles and cyclic law. So in approaching this idea of new year, new cycle, we're reminded of that statement in the Bhagavad Gita, said to have been recorded 5,000 years ago, where Krishna says in the 8th chapter that light and dark are the world's eternal ways. And the more we study, we come to realize that there are traces of an teaching as old as the world, that periodically the entire universe comes into manifestation, and periodically it returns, it dissolves into its primeval and eternal source. And this periodic manifestation and dissolution, activity and rest, has been symbolized as the days and nights of Brahma. Now, the subject or the idea of the days and nights of Brahma, as it relates to the cosmos, is, we might say, the archetype for our periods of days and nights, activity and rest as human beings, our periods of waking and sleeping, but also for the days and nights of the solar year of 365 days. The old Hermetic philosophers taught, as above, so it is below. And indeed, if we lived at the North Pole, our day would consist of half of 365 days, and our nights would be an equal portion of darkness, lasting for the other half of the year. However, for those living on other points of the globe, the times of daylight and darkness are relative to where you're living on the globe and what time of the year it is. So the Earth is inclined on its north-south axis at a certain degree as it travels around the sun in its annual orbit. So the shortest period of daylight for those living in the northern hemisphere, sometimes called the shortest day of the year, is December 21st. And as the year progresses, the time of daylight gets longer and the time of darkness gets less. So the longest day of the year for those living in the northern hemisphere is June 21st. These two times are sometimes referred to as the winter solstice and the summer solstice. And that term solstice refers to the sun apparently standing still. Now, the sun doesn't actually stand still, but what it means is as the Earth moves around the sun and the direct rays of the sun fall upon the Earth, that at the time of the winter solstice, the direct rays of the sun are at the lowest latitude they can reach directly on the Earth, the so-called Tropic of Capricorn. And as the year progresses from December 21st to June 21st, the direct rays of the sun move gradually more north until they reach their highest point in the northern hemisphere, the so-called Tropic of Cancer. So this time of year, December 21st to December 25th, is very special among the ancients. It is sometimes referred to as the time of the birth of the sun, and also the birth of the sun gods, because in various civilizations around the world, we see that their sun gods, their saviors, are interestingly enough born on December 25th at this time. So when we look at the stories of the Persian Mithra, the Egyptian Osiris, the Greek Bacchus, the Phoenician Adonis, we see this same tradition. So it is a universal special time. So at this time, we have the return of the sun, the rays of light, life, and other forces associated with the sun become stronger every day from this point on, from December 21st on, until they reach their peak, as we said, at the time of the summer solstice. And when the ancients viewed or revered the sun, it was more than the physical sun that we see with our eyes. Hopefully not directly, but we know is out there with our eyesight. The physical sun, they understood to be the visible agent, the focus in space, the reflection of the invisible, true sun. And in the philosophy, when we speak of something as being invisible, true, we attach to the meaning of it the idea of its permanence, its enduring universal nature. So this spiritual sun is a representation in our minds of that absolute deific principle, the universal, eternal, boundless source of life. The source from which we said previously, the universe periodically manifests and returns. The physical sun, then, being the center of our solar system, is the source of life physically, the source of energy for our system. But behind that, the real spiritual sun is the spiritual center of our system and the source, we might say, of our spiritual life and those inner spiritual energies. So we might see a correspondence, begin to see a correspondence here. In the philosophy, we have this idea that all souls are fundamentally identical with the universal oversoul. And the idea of universal brotherhood is based on this spiritual identity of all souls with the universal deific principle, which is boundless and eternal. So the spiritual sun is, as the spiritual sun is the deific cause or principle of all that manifests in the universe, the higher self, what is called in Sanskrit Atma, is the deific essence of the human being. And both the cosmic understanding of deity and the atmic, or the higher self, is also represented by this idea of the sun. And when you think about it, it makes sense, because just as the physical sun radiates its light on all, impersonally, on all life in the physical universe, in the physical solar system, so too Atma, the higher self, radiates the light of its wisdom on all kingdoms, on all beings. And it is felt to greater or lesser extent according to the psychic, the inner psychic and intellectual nature of that being. So, what about this idea of the return of the sun? There's an interesting statement by HPB. She says that The astral life of the Earth is young and strong between Christmas and Easter. Those who form their wishes now will have added strength to fulfill them constantly. What does that mean? Well, we learn in the philosophy that there are cycles to everything in nature, and that there's a correspondence between the increasing light that falls upon certain areas of the earth at this time, beginning at this time of year, and the increasing impulse, the upward impulse of tendency becoming stronger and stronger in our inner nature. So we might say the light of Atma, that higher self, also becomes stronger and stronger as we progress through the year from this point. It's sort of like a rising wave. You know, if you want to catch the wave at the right point to work with it rather than swim against it. So all that we desire to do has a greater spiritual and psychic impulse now than at other times of the year. We add to our individual will and magnetism the collective impulse and energy that is felt throughout nature and our own inner nature at this time of year. More of this light can assist us if we dwell on the true nature of the spiritual sun, especially at this time of year and as we progress through the months to come. Not just thinking of the sun or being aware of the sun physically, but dwelling mentally, making that mental connection between our mind and the true significance of what that spiritual sun represents to us, the higher self, the spark of the deific essence in each and all. So we'll close this panel presentation with this excerpt from the Gayatri. Gayatri is part of the Rig Veda and is a mantramic hymn pronounced by the disciple at sunrise. Unveil, O thou who givest sustenance to the universe, from whom all proceed, to whom all must return. That face of the true sun, now hidden by a vase of golden light, that we may see the truth and do our whole duty on our journey to thy sacred seat. So having the advantage of being aware of the uprising tide spiritually and physically, which is beginning to occur and is particularly strong at this time of year, how are we to make the most use of that with knowledge? And so that will be the focus of our next panel presentation. Unmute, please.
So we just heard a talk on the metaphysical aspects of this time of year. So what do we do with all this information then? That, how can we think about this rising tide, the spiritual sun? How do we bring that down to a more mundane level? And some think because it's a new year that we might as well, it's a starting point for a lot of people. They think about, well, what can I do with the new year coming? How can I change? What can I do about my thinking? So what is it in us then that we feel the need to change? And this change, of course, is the idea of making resolutions. One of the things that helps us to understand this need for humans to make these changes, because as humans, we do have the ability to make choices to change things in our lives because we are able to see the future that is based on these changes. So there's this idea in the philosophy of cyclic return of impressions, which we can also look at as being karma. Because these actions that we have performed in the past, even these thoughts that we've had in the past, in one life, will come to fruition in another. And karma is not linear. So what happens in this life will not necessarily come to fruition in the next life. It could be many, many lives down when that time is appropriate. Because when we do something once, and if we find out maybe it's successful, we have a tendency to repeat it. You do it twice and it doubles its influence. This is the idea of a habit. They say if you do something 21 times, that it will become a habit. But the thing is, it also, as we do it over and over again, it doubles its influence on us. So if it happens to be a negative action that we are doing, and we do it over and over again, because maybe we don't see that it needs to be changed, maybe we don't want to, for whatever reason, so what happens is that this impression will continue from life to life, and at some point it will show itself. And at that point, if we haven't worked on it, it is harder to change. Because we do impress ourselves with things that we have done and thought. So this expression will happen when that time is right. But if we know about cyclic opportunities like this, then we will be able to make those changes. But it does involve self-examination. And Mr. Judge says in his article, Cyclic Impressions and Return, he says, an opportunity will arise for you to do something. You do not do it. You may not have it again for 100 years. It is the return before you of some old thing along the line of the cycles. You neglect it as you may, and the same opportunity will return, mind you, but it may not return for many 100 years. It may not return until another life. But it will return under the same law. So what does all this have to do with resolutions then? If we know about the cyclic return of impressions, if we know about karma, then we have that knowledge in which we can change our actions and our thoughts. And as we said, it's only the human that is able to make these changes in order to change future karma. Because resolutions is a way to change those impressions that keep returning. We need to address them in order to learn these lessons and progress along our spiritual path. So one question we do have to ask ourselves is, what is the difference between a resolution and a vow? And what does will and desire have to do with this time of year? So as was said in the first talk, this is the time of the return of the sun. And the ancients celebrated the birth of the sun along its northern course, beginning on December 21st. And because they put forth this idea that these occult forces in nature have an increasing strength at this return, this gives the impulse to the natural forces and spiritual forces in ourselves. And we have to understand that. We have to know that we are given an opportunity, a chance to make those choices that will improve our lives. So with this increased impression of spiritual and psychic rejuvenation, all our desires have greater impetus than at other times of years. So this is why now we are looking at making the resolutions at this time of year. And we look at the ideas of will and desire, resolutions versus vows. Those of you who had joined us on Wednesday's ocean class, we had a very interesting discussion on this idea of will and desire. We understand now that will is a spirit of a spiritual nature. It creates intelligently, whereas desire, which is of a lower nature, creates blindly and unconsciously. So the whole thing that we have to understand is that we need to raise our desires to a higher level. But people mistake desire for will, because will needs to be our guiding force. The difference then of making a vow or resolution has to do with the same difference between will and desire. Our motive must be to change for the good of all. Thus, making resolutions is not just, I'm not going to eat chocolate anymore. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. Because we do have to understand that putting things in a negative light oftentimes just causes failure. So a vow then is based on one's will. It's a solemn promise to do something, not to do something, but to do something, and is usually of a higher nature. Now, when we say we're going to take a vow of silence, doesn't necessarily mean like monks do, where they don't talk at all. Making a vow of silence can be just not gossiping, speaking the truth, that kind of thing. Speaking in the service of higher self. It can be like the Kuan Yin pledge. And we would like to read it because it's so beautiful. It says, never will I seek nor receive private individual salvation. Never will I enter into final peace alone, but forever and everywhere will I live and strive for the redemption of every creature throughout the world. So this is where we understand the difference between a resolution and a vow. So what does will and desire have to do with this time of the year? Since it is looked at as being the time of increased cyclical and psychic energy, then we can use it to our advantage. But making these resolutions is not the simple mundane thought that most people think about making resolutions is. They should be used to change our lower nature. They need to change our desire. We need to focus on our will, which is of a higher nature, and help to raise up that idea of desires that can be used for the good of all. They can also be used to change the direction of our karma, as we now have that opportunity to make those choices, and then we will be able to start a new cycle for the future and even now, because these choices can be used to change our thinking and our spiritual nature now. So at this time, we are being given the chance to spiritually progress as long as we know how to use the cycle for the good of all. And we do just want to end on by a quote by H.P. Blavatsky in her article on the new year. She says, "Happy New Year to all. This seems easy enough to say, and everyone expects such a greeting. Yet whether the wish, though it may proceed from a sincere heart, is likely to be realized, even in the case of few, is more difficult to decide. According to our theosophical tenets, every man or woman is endowed more or less with a magnetic potentiality, which, when helped by a sincere and especially by an intense and indomitable will, is the most effective of magic levers placed by nature in human hands for woe or weal. Let us then, theosophists, use that will to send a sincere greeting and wish of luck for the new year to every living creature under the sun, enemies and relentless traducers included. Let us try and feel especially kindly and forgiving to our foes and persecutors, honest or dishonest, lest some of us should send unconsciously an evil eye greeting instead of a blessing." So we will now open up questions to both panelists. Yes, we have a question in Theosophy Hall.
Well, it's actually a statement. It's interesting that Kuan Yin, literally translated, means observe sound. Hmm. And it's traditionally interpreted as one who hears the cries of the world. And isn't it interesting that sound is the first, the word, the emanation, the first expression of the deific essence is one of sound. And we are always told to observe everything around us. So Kuan Yin mystically observes the sounds, the cries of the world, those who are that need help. Hmm.
Yes, the comment having to do with the meaning of the name Kuan Yin, which means what?
Observe sound.
Observe sound. And to also...
One who hears the cries of the world.
Okay, one that hears the cries of the world. So, and it's also the first manifestation of... the logos. So sound is very important. And when we look at the pledge, it says, "I live and strive for the redemption of every creature throughout the world." So Kuan Yin meaning hearing the cries of all.
We might add that in that tradition, Kuan Yin and Kuan Shiyin are the two aspects of that manifested logos. Not just the word, the idea manifested in the logos, but also the power and the force of that word. And we know sound is not just noise, it has force. So we were wondering, is there a special value if we make a vow or a pledge? Is it given more force if we say it out loud? even if it's just to ourselves, not just think it or dwell on it in our heart, but if we express it. Some people write it down, some people say it. We wonder if that adds an extra potency to the power of a vow or even higher resolution.
We would think it would. We know, and plus thinking it and saying it, we know that thoughts are powerful. And by expressing these thoughts in words, the energy, the impressions we would think would be more intense once it's expressed than if it was just thought. And in regards to writing, we know that when we write something down, we're more bound to remember what that was. There's something about that repetitive motion, writing, and we would think would be more impressive. It would impress even more if it was spoken. MDW, unmute.
Isn't that how we operate? That we have the thought, and if we can put it into words, it gives it strength, because from there manifest deeds. So we would think that saying it would be very powerful, and writing it as well. Because you have to formulate the idea in your mind to be able to write it down and let alone speak it.
Yes, we think you can understand it better if a thought comes into your mind and you know you're going to have to speak it. It's like on the platform. Some of us do better thinking on our feet than others. Some people have to, when the thought comes in, they have to mull it over and be able to actually put it in a coherent sentence. And others do that much better. And we imagine that ability is karmic in nature, but we will understand something better once it is formulated in a coherent way and then is spoken.
We were thinking that we have to not only look at resolution and vows differently, where they come from, but the implication and the responsibility. And what was said before about a resolution can be a very high desire and energizing will. A vow or a pledge seems to be, even if we follow that Kuan Yin pledge, an invocation of those highest energies of ourself. We think of marriage vows. They are a vow is the most sacred promise to the highest we can imagine in ourselves. It's an invocation. And so we have to take that very seriously. It's one thing to fall short or forget a resolution. But if we make a vow, especially to a higher self, we are obliged to carry it out. Even if we fail, we still have to keep trying. We can't give up on it. We can't give up on ourselves. And so, yes, in 2 months, 3 months, we may make mistakes or not live up to our ideals, but the vow implies that we're going to get up and keep trying.
We wonder how many people actually understand the difference between a vow and a resolution, and how important making a vow is, if it's done flippantly or if it's, you know, done with a serious mind turned to it. We don't know if most people understand the significance of a vow or a pledge. MDW.
So if this is the beginning of a rising tide, you know, joy to the world or hope, you know, hope springs eternal. You know, there is, you know, you have on this rising tide, that means that something from within is rising. Our heart is rising, our compassion, our feeling nature. And when we hear the words of praise being sung, you know, perhaps it's meant differently to other people, but to a theosophist, you know, we're praising our higher self, the joy that it can bring. So, you know, that the having that positive thought, and the, you know, it is so easy to become negative.
Yes, it is, especially, you know, now, the climate now is, it's very easy to become negative. But if we look at this time of the year, one thing physically with this time of the year, with this rising tide, it affects us physically as well. We know that with the moon, it affects our, you know, all the water that's in our system. Some people have an issue when there's a full moon. But with the sun, people always feel better when it's a bright, sunny day rather than overcast and cloudy. So with the sun's position now, it will affect us physically. And hopefully we will be more optimistic because we're feeling better with it, with that rising tide, psychically and physically. A follow-up?
Sure.
Yes. It's said by the ancients that between the winter solstice and the vernal equinox is the most psychic time of the year. So we should use that to our advantage. And dwell on the ideas that elevate us. Because, yes, just try and do that.
JCS. Out of hand. We were thinking along those lines, why is it so important to why is it so important to restore or repeat our vow periodically, work with that cycle? And we're reminded that in the tradition of the occult philosophy, January 4th is what's called the occult New Year. And the reason for that is because at that time of year, it is said sometime about 18 million years ago, spiritual beings who had reached self-consciousness had lit up the fire of mind in their own nature in previous periods of evolution, descended and lit up the spark of mind in humanity, giving it self-consciousness, giving it a new start in this period of evolution on the path of spiritual evolution. And that periodically at different times, those same spiritual beings descend at the beginning and end of great cycles to set a keynote, that a sound, a vibration that will serve us through all that time. And so in a like way, at certain times of year, as was pointed out, we sense there's something, a higher spirit working and in us. We recognize that and bring it to bear, bring it into our awareness to set a keynote of how we want to think and feel and act during the coming year. So it is an inner new year for us at this time, as well as celebrated as the physical new year based on the sun by many peoples around the world. We were also thinking, it's said that the higher psychic and spiritual influence, the light of Atma, arouses us at this time of year, and we can feel peace and joy. But that's not universal. Some people get very depressed at this time of year. And we think it's because they don't understand the cycle. The cycle brings also forth, because it affects our higher nature, the memory and the feeling of those we've cherished so much in our life, and perhaps have lost. Because those loved ones represent the highest values of our personal nature. So the memory comes of those we lost, but instead of appreciating for what they are and that represented us, the personality grieves in the loss, in the separation, in the sense of separateness. And so feels sad and depressed at this time. But it is a returning cycle. It's meant to arouse in us the awareness of the highest memories and impulses in our nature. And so we should cherish them appropriately and give them life in our mind.
Yes, it's the personality that is missing that person or persons. And by missing them, we know that that's what is creating the sadness. But if we can look at that, as was just said, from a higher aspect and appreciate the time that was had with them rather than the loss, the personality feels that missing. So, MDW.
But it is the reality that we're all going to die. And that when that day comes, there will be those that will miss us. But we know that when that passes, when those feelings of loss pass, and they don't ever really truly pass, but we always have a lingering memory because we have become attached to the people around us. And it's one thing for the mind to understand something, but it's also another thing for the body to understand. And I guess we think, I guess this is what the journey is all about, to gain control of that lower nature, why do we become attached in that idea of separateness, how it is so embedded in our consciousness.
And we would think in order to change, using this time of year, this uplift in the energy, I mean, we are given this opportunity in order to change, as was just suggested. And by making these vows to our higher nature that, you know, we are going to become more compassionate. In watching how we speak, watching how we think, doing for others and not expecting anything in return, being mindful of what we're putting into our minds in regards to music and TV shows and movies, looking at life, raising the mundane to the sacred, and just being more compassionate, we think.
So at this time of year, it's not only the time of the longest period of darkness in the Northern Hemisphere, but things seem around us to be dead or dying or very silent. Certain kinds of trees lose their leaves. The flowers, the colorful flowers that we naturally admired or wilted or withered or gone away completely, and certain species are hidden and hibernating. So there is a sense of inertness, stillness. And yet, because of that spiritual impulse, it is said that in the very slumbering seeds in the earth, a vibration is felt that will stimulate it to renewal and growth. So in the spring, we see the rejuvenation, the reappearance, the resurrection into life of all that seemed dead or dying at this time. So it's a reminder to us when we think about those we love to not think about them as leaves or petals, but try to think of them as souls, as seeds, as germs, as eternal essences, which will once again come forth and manifest at another time. And through our attachments, the very attachments, the dear attachments we've had to them, we'll find them in our lives, and they'll find us, and we continue on our journey together.
We find that idea very comforting, knowing that when we have lost the loved one, the philosophy talks about, as was just said, that connection will bring us back in some life. And even if we will not recognize that, oh, this was my mother, but we'll know that there is a connection, and we'll just know that there is, that we can connect with them because of these things. And we mustn't forget that if there was if there were issues to be worked out, that person will come back in our lives as well. So it goes both ways. So we do have, looks like, 3 minutes left if anybody wants to share again or share for the first time. Yes, SL.
It was talking of the vow of silence, the way we can use it in controlling of our speech, and the vow to be of service to others at the Kuan Yin pledge. But we hear of another kind of vow. And we were wondering how we could approach that, and that is the vow of poverty. What does that mean? Does it mean that we're supposed to give away all our worldly possessions, all our wealth, not to aspire to gain things? What does the vow of poverty mean to us?
We think, of course, just like the vow of silence with the monks, they don't say anything. They also take a vow of poverty where they basically don't have any material goods. But we think at our stage, we're looking at not accumulating, not having to get the name brand items, the designer bags, shoes, sneakers, that sort of thing, but just concentrating on what we need. So we think with this vow of poverty that it's a matter of not being so materialistic, not concentrating so much on, you know, the gimme idea. So does anybody else want to add to that?
We're also thinking that those who take the vow of poverty not only dispense with personal attachments to anything, to things of this world, but they also freely give it away to those. And perhaps that's a reminder that the vow of poverty is whatever we desire or aspire to achieve in any way should be free of self-attachment or personal ambition, but rather to accumulate it so we can put it to the benefit of others. And
right. And it looks like our time is up, and we just wanted to reiterate as a closing that we are being given an opportunity at this time of year to help ourselves to elevate that spiritual nature to a different level, and that we need to do it for the good of all, not just for ourselves, but for all beings. So let us strive to take this opportunity. And Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year.